Blog Talk Radio.
A couple of questions I need help with today, and I couldn't really get too far with the program without your assistance and advice always. I've been wondering about questions of integrity and authenticity, but you know, those are a little bit meatier than I want to get into right away with the program. This is the 351st day of the year. The winter solstice is soon approaching. The time when, from time immemorial, we gathered as humans gathered to celebrate the victory of the sun over the night, the return of light. The return of the gift of life. Without the light, no crops. Without the crops, no food. Without the food, no us. We're a strange little bunch. Seem to have got this notion that we dominate all that there is. We were created to be supreme. And I think that's one of the most interesting and perhaps unfair statements or thoughts that could have been passed on to us. So sit back in your most comfortable chair, put on your slippers, or if you're driving, sit back, put on the seat warmers, get your favorite beverage du jour in hand, and let's see if we can't string together a few ideas. I'm just going to sit here and enjoy a nice cup of French roast. Life's good. The idea that we laud ourselves over all things is really curious. Well, with the dinosaurs, remember those things? Jurassic Park, all that kind of stuff. Dinosaurs were around longer than we've been on the face of the earth. I don't know if I see many dinosaurs anymore. They seem to have, although the science seems to be telling us now that birds are remnants of the ancient dinosaurs. So So that's kind of interesting. The dinosaurs seem to have been around for 350 million years. And they disappeared about 165 million years ago. It's claimed, again, always the domination, that they were around Earth for over 165 million years. What did I say, 350? But about 65 million years ago, they went extinct. And now we study their remains to find out how and why it happened. It's kind of interesting when you think that, what have we been around, 400,000 years? And I mean, the Cretaceous period lasted longer than that, didn't it? Yeah. Huh. You do the math. I don't know if the dinosaurs weren't had the. I don't think I'm not going to anthropomorphize all of this, but I don't think that they had the ability to move the landscape to create chemicals that perhaps weren't conducive to life. I don't know what contributed. I don't want to give more credit than it's due, but you know, it's troublesome that we have ways of we seem to be, as I was taught, we're all taught, one of the few creatures that will kill ourselves, and you know, not only will we kill other people, but kill other creatures of our kind. But when we begin to understand, our consciousness allows us to understand what we're doing. I don't think we don't belong. I don't think. I believe that we are natural creatures, all part of this. But I think the math, for me, doesn't really look that that favorable. It's like, can we make it for a million years? And then string a few more of those together before we start to decide that we rule over everything that is. I think it might be a bit wise. Of course, you and I are part of an order that is pre-Christian. You know, we all study the temple of we all know about the temple of Solomon. Certainly dated before Christianity, and historic purists, or certainly I think the metaphor and the temple is essential and important to us, faithful people, and I think it tells us as Freemasons that we're stretching. And understanding, putting the contemporary Protestant beliefs into a broader context of time. Of course, I'm talking about, you know, 17th, 18th century Brittany, Europe. The history is not lost to us. The order allows us to explore, to question, and to study. Some of our ideas, you know, the idea that we're speaking about a little earlier, about being connected. Well, you know, all things being connected, we're particles and parts of all things. String theory, are we at the smallest level, tiny strings that are in loops? Well, we know that we are energy. In an amazing universe. And we're part of that. It's hard for some of us to reason it all through. What's the incredible part of it? There's so much. It's like history exists in our minds. Maybe the mind is the most incredible part of this experience. But so does music. Music only exists in our minds. It's pressure against an eardrum, after all. And then Kabbalah teach us, remind us, and instruct us that there's a connection between us and everything in us. I think this is called parenthism. Parenthism, I think. It's sort of a, I guess, a theological notion that ran contrary to the separation of Christian thought. That here we are, part of that what did they call it, naturalism? They fought against the believers that we were all rooted and connected in the larger natural context. And son of a gun, eh? If you do think that way, it's hard to believe that there would be a faith trying to argue that we're not connected in some way, but there you have it. Maybe not so dominant, maybe stewards of some of it, part of it, a little portion of it. Maybe we don't quite understand nearly as much as we thought we did. But you and I are the repository of a great many incredibly interesting ideas. Fascinating ideas. Wasn't that long ago that, you know, we were talking about light and day and measurements and time. I'm just astounded that you know, it wasn't that there was a, you know, trying to stretch my mind that there was a time when we didn't have measure things the way we do. It was a gain and a gain, I think, is the way it was put. When we woke up, it was a gain, and when we went to bed, it was a gain. And you and I measured doesn't necessarily make it real, I guess. It just makes it what it is. I'm going to try and get up a bit of music here for you. We're rushing, are we catapulting through the universe looking for another planet to inhabit when this one, our sun, starts to burn out? I will say, you know, my faith, of course, is that we're such a resourceful and curious bunch. And some of the great inventions that come to us by deliberate action, but a lot of them come from so-called mistakes. The observant amongst us notice things. It's funny that we... are moving forward always to the
Hello? Hello?
Well, we have a number of things on the go today. I have answers, and we'll take it from there. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the eternal quest, if you don't mind. The Lost Keys. This is from our friend Manly Hall. Remarkable young man. The average Mason, as well as the modern student of Masonic ideals, little realizes the cosmic obligation he takes upon himself when he begins his search for the sacred truths of nature, as they are concealed in the ancient and modern rituals. He must not lightly regard his vows, and if he would not bring upon himself years and years of suffering, he must cease to consider Freemasonry solely as a social order only a few centuries old. He must realize that the ancient mystic teachings as perpetuated in the modern rites are sacred, and that powers unseen and unrecognized mold the destiny of those who consciously and of their own free will take upon themselves the obligations of the fraternity. Freemasonry is not a material thing. It is a science of the soul. It is not a creed or doctrine, but a universal expression of the divine wisdom. The coming together of medieval guilds or even the building of Solomon's Temple as it is understood today has little, if anything, to do with the true origin of Freemasonry. Freemasonry does not deal with personalities. It is, in its highest sense, neither historical nor archaeological, but is a divine symbolic language perpetuated under certain concrete symbols, the sacred mysteries of the ancients. Only those who see it in this cosmic study, a life work, a divine inspiration to better thinking, better feeling, and better living, the spiritual attainment of enlightenment at the end, and with the daily life of the true Mason as it the means. Have gained even the slightest insight into the truest mysteries of the ancient rites. The age of the Masonic school is not to be calculated in hundreds or even thousands of years, for it never had any origin in the world's form. The world as we see it is merely an experimental laboratory in which man is laboring to build and express greater and more perfect vehicles. Into this laboratory pour myriads of rays descending from the cosmic hierarchies. These mighty globes and orbs which focus their energies upon mankind and mold its destiny do so in an orderly manner, each in its own way and place. And it is the working of these mystic hierarchies in the universe which forms the pattern around which the Masonic school has been built. For the true lodge of the Masons is the universe, free of limitations of creed and sect. He stands a master of all faiths. And those who take up the study of Freemasonry without realizing the depth, the beauty and the spiritual power of its philosophy, can never gain anything of permanence from their studies. The age of the mystery schools can be traced by the student back to the dawn of time, ages and aeons ago, when the temple of the solar man was in the making. That was the first temple of the king, and therein were given and laid down the true mysteries of the ancient lodge. And it was the gods of creation and the spirits of dawn who first tiled the master's lodge. The initiated brother realizes his so-called symbols and rituals are merely blinds fabricated by the wise to perpetuate ideas incomprehensible to the average individual. He also realizes that few Masons of today know or appreciate the mystic meaning concealed within these rituals. With religious faith, we perpetuate the form, worshiping it instead of the life of those who have not recognized the truth in the crystallized ritual, those who have not liberated the spiritual germ from the shell of empty words are not Masons, regardless of their physical degrees and outward honors. This is Manly Hall talking about the true Mason, integrity, authenticity, and in his mind, the depth of a Mason, what he looked for and what he expected at an intellectual and spiritual level. Perhaps I would talk to, I'd like to sit down like you would with Manly and say, let's have a pint and let's have a glass of whiskey and let's have a cup of tea and talk about this a bit. He seems also, I want to believe, entirely approachable. Here he makes himself vulnerable to us, for us. And if he didn't care deeply about us, he wouldn't have done that. In the work we are taking up, it is not the intention to dwell upon the modern concepts of the craft, but to consider Freemasonry as it really is, to those who know, a great cosmic organism whose true brothers and sisters and children are tied together, not by spoken oaths, but by lives so lived that they are capable of seeing through the blank wall and opening the window which is now concealed by the rubbish of materiality. This is done and the mysteries of the universe unfold before the aspiring candidate. Then, in truth, he discovers what Freemasonry really is. His material aspects interest him no longer, for he has unmasked the mystery school, which he is capable of recognizing only when he himself has spiritually become a member of it. We're now defining where it is, what it is, how it is. Those who have examined and studied its ancient lore have noted that Freemasonry, like the universe itself, which is the greatest of all schools, deals with the unfolding of a threefold principle. For all the universe is governed by the same three kings, so to speak, who are called the builders of the Masonic Temple. Please try not to take this literally. It's not intended that way, is it? They are not personalities, but principles, great intelligent energies and power which in God, man, and the universe have charge of the holding of cosmic substance into the habitation of the living king. The temple built through the ages, first of unconscious and then conscious effort on the part of every individual, is expressing in his daily life the creative principles of these three kings. What we're being taught is that the work, the construct, is in our minds. This is where we penetrate that veil of personality so that we can approach insight and understanding. Strength here is not measured in amounts, volumes. It's measured in understanding. They are not personalities, but principles, intelligent energies and powers, which in God, man, and the universe have charge of the holding cosmic substance into the habitation of the living king. If there is dominance, it's our ability to reason through it. If that gives us some sense of superiority, it's because we embrace the humility of it all. The true brother of the Ashraf realized that the completion of the temple he was building to the king of the universe was a duty, or rather a privilege, which he owed to his God, to his brother, and to himself. He knew that certain steps must be taken, and that his temple must be built according to plan. Today it seems that the plan is lost. However, for in the majority of cases, Freemasonry is no longer an operative art, but is merely a speculative idea, until each brother, seeing the mystery of his symbols and pondering over the beautiful allegories unfolded in his ritual, realizes that he himself contains the keys and plans so long lost to his craft, and that he would ever learn Freemasonry. If he would ever learn Freemasonry, he must unlock its doors with the key from the base metals of his own being. True Freemasonry is esoteric. It is not a thing of this world. All that we have here is a link, a door through which the student may pass into the unknown. Freemasonry has nothing to do with things of form, save that it realizes form is molded by and manifests the life it contains. Consequently, the student is seen so to mold his life that the form will glorify God, the temple he is slowly building, as he awakens one by one the workmen within himself and directs them to carry out the plan that he has given him out of heaven. So far as it is possible to discover, ancient Freemasonry and the beautiful cosmic allegories which it teaches perpetuate through hundreds of lodges and ancient mysteries, form the oldest of the mystery schools. This is a term used by ancients to designate the esoteric side of their religious ceremonials. The candidate passing through these mysteries was initiated into the mysteries of nature and the arcane side of natural law. Through the ages, its preservation is not dependent upon itself as an exoteric body or partly evolved individuals, but upon a concealed brotherhood, the esoteric side of Freemasonry. Concealed, not secret. All the great mystery schools have hierarchies upon the spiritual planes of nature, which are expressing themselves in this world through creeds and organizations. The true student seeks to lift himself from the exoteric body upward, spiritually, until he joins the esoteric group, which, without a lodge in the physical plane of nature, is far greater than all the lodges of which it is the central fire. The spiritual instructors of humanity are forced to labor in the concrete world with things comprehensible to the concrete mind. There, man begins to comprehend the meaning of the allegories and symbols which surround his esoteric work as soon as he prepares himself to receive them. The Chinese realizes that the work of the mystery schools in the world is of an inclusive rather than exclusive nature, and that the only lodge which is broad enough to express his ideals is one whose dome is the heavens, whose pillars are the corners of creation. Checkerboard floor is composed of crossing currents of human emotion, and whose altar is the human heart. Creeds cannot bind a true seeker for truth. Realizing the unity of all truth, the demon also realizes that the hierarchies laboring with him have given him in his varying degrees the mystic spiritual rituals of all the mystery schools in the world. And if he would fill his place in the plan, he must not enter this sacred study for we get out of it, but that he may learn how to serve. Freemasonry is concealed the mystery of creation, the answer to the problem of existence, and the path the student must tread in order to join those who are really the living powers behind the thrones of modern national and international affairs. The true student realizes most of all that the taking of degrees does not make a man a Mason. A Mason is not appointed. He is evolved. And he must realize that the position he holds in the esoteric lodge means nothing compared to his position in the spiritual edge of life. He must forever discard the idea that he can be told or instructed in the sacred mysteries, or that his being a member of an organization improves him in any way. He must realize that his duty to build and evolve the sacred teachings in his own being, with nothing but his own purified being, that nothing but his own purifying can unlock the door to the sealed libraries of human consciousness. And that his Masonic rites must eternally be speculative until he makes them operative by living the life of the mystic Mason. His karmic responsibilities increase with opportunities. Those who are surrounded with knowledge and opportunity for self-improvement and make something of these opportunities to lazy workmen who will be spiritually, if not physically, cast out of the temple of the king. The Masonic Order is not a mere social organization, but is composed of all those who have banded themselves together to learn and apply the principles of mysticism and the occult rites. They are, or should be, philosophers, sages, and sober-minded individuals who have dedicated themselves upon the Masonic altar and vowed by all that they hold dear that the world shall be better, wiser, and happier because they have lived. Those who enter the mystic rites and pass between the pillars seeking either prestige or commercial advantage are blasphemers. And while in this world we may count them as successful, they are the cosmic failures who have barred themselves out from the true right, whose keynote is selfishness, and whose works have renounced the things of earth. In ancient times, many years of preparation were required before the neophyte was permitted to enter the temple of the mysteries. In this way, the shallow, the curious, the faint of heart, and those unable to withstand the temptations of life were automatically eliminated by their inability to meet requirements for mission. The successful candidate who did pass between the pillars entered the temple, keenly realizing his opportunity, his divine obligation, and the mystic privilege which he had earned for himself through years of special preparation. Only those are true Masons who enter this temple in reverence, who seek not the ephemeral things of life, but the treasures which are eternal. Whose sole desire is to know the true mystery of the craft that may join an honest workman, those who have gone before as builders of the universal temple. The Masonic ritual is not a ceremony, but a life to be lived. Those alone are truly Masons who, dedicating lives and their fortunes upon the altar of the living flame, undertake the construction of the one universal building of which they are the workmen and their God, the living architect. When we have Masons like this, the craft will again be operative. The flaming triangle will shine forth with greater luster, and the dead builder will rise from his tomb. The lost word, so long concealed from the profane, will blaze forth again with the power that makes all things new. We need to understand, considerate temple builders, craftsmen, artisans alike, they are the keys which, if only read, will leave the student still in ignorance, but if lived, change the speculative masonry of today into the operative masonry of tomorrow. When each builder, realizing his own place, will see things which he never saw before, not because they were not there, but because he was blind. There are none so blind as those who will not see. The noblest tool of the Freemason is his mind, but its value is measured by the use made of it. Thoughtful in all things, the aspiring candidate to divine wisdom attains reality in sincere desire, in meditation, and in silence. Let the keynote of the craft and of the ritual be written in amazing words. Think of me. What is the meaning of this mystic maze of symbols, rites, and rituals? Think. What does life mean with the crossings of human relationships, the endless pageantry of qualities masquerading in a carnival of fools? Think. What is the plan behind it all? And who the planner? Where dwells the great architect, and what is the tracing board upon which he designs? think. What is the human soul, and why endless yearning to ends unknown, along pathways where each must wander unaccompanied? There is something going on. The only person you should try to be better than is the person you were yesterday. The world guided by wisdom is the proverbial heaven on earth, so says an old proverb. We live in a world of probabilities, don't we? Universe of probabilities. So can we all declare, I am a great believer in luck, and I find the harder work, the more I have of it. Our friend Albert said, intellectual growth should commence at birth and cease only at death. Old Chinese proverb says, teachers open the door. You enter yourself. We live in a secular environment that seems to make us enormously self-conscious about spiritual things, philosophical. From the time we were boys, we learned to accept the harness and we accept the weight of our labors. And we try to do that with a smile on our face, trying always to understand that there's an important purpose or reason. Understand what you are and what the world is, and then only fulfillment will come to you. but look deeper into nature, and then you will understand everything better. Meanwhile, where do we inhibit our own communication, our own access to ideas? This or the sense of right and wrong? There we have the judges, all around us. Those who, men of insight who tell us, who understand. Wise man learns by the mistakes of others. A fool by his own. Remember, we live in a world of experts. And where is it getting us? Experts that guess, experts that perhaps are still trapped in the world of materialism. Does greatness and power give us expertise and insight? Not a bit. The scientist Robert Oppenheimer once said, "A foolish man seeks happiness in the distance. Wise grows it under his feet." One of my favorite, pleasant minds I've ever experienced, Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "The invariable mark of wisdom is to see the miraculous in the common." Look around. An attempt to accept and be pleased and along with the things that you have. Not to say you can't and shouldn't strive. No, of course not. Not to say that you and I are going to be able to step out of the secular environment that raised us. The notion that this was somehow superior. Well, it was in a way, because we don't have an urge to kill our fellow man because they don't believe the same things we believe. Or do we? We still leave our zealots to go and attack their zealots and their zealots to fuel a fire so that we can attack them back. But we know better. It's tremendously sad. We have work to do with them. I think when you listen, you tune in to Masonic Home Companion. Of course, I think that we take things seriously. I think we should take all things seriously, but never ourselves. Never ourselves. Don't take life too seriously. You'll never get out of it alive. This side, is your life and the way you look at it a series of problems? Well, of course you're right. You have the answers, don't you? To all the problems around us. But it doesn't seem like life's a problem to be solved. Kierkegaard tells us that it was not a problem to be solved, but a reality to be experienced. Hard to believe that we can get caught up in so much of the concrete, what we see. Remember, not so many years ago, hearing people talk about wanting to remove memory work from the craft. And some jurisdictions that they try, don't they? Where they practice the craft, it can be made a master mason in a single day. Field days, I think they call it. As I sit in my business suit or my tuxedo, I'm thinking, I'm puzzled. It makes me feel like I'm an alien. I have a hard time relating to that. Until I begin to realize that perhaps it's an act of desperation. perhaps it's a belief that in order to survive, you need large numbers of people being initiated. Maybe it's like a cult in a way. You get 1,000 men coming in, and perhaps you'll find 100 pearls in all those oysters. Yeah, I understand the merit of that. But I'd like to think, instead of it being that kind of randomness, that we need to give each fellow an opportunity to walk through the portal himself. Take that next step on your own, because you can. We can't force people to do that. No matter that you and I think that it's essential. There's qualifiers, as we just heard. Everybody doesn't have the same ability, the same curiosity, the same need. We need to be respectful of that. But we're more likely to bump into men who are trying to understand and grapple with the mysteries of the mind inside a Masonic order than we are outside, I would think. If we lost the luster charm of the Victorian time, well, we could all get lost in the notion that it was a wonderful, simplistic period of life compared to today, but it wasn't. It was different. But you and I can learn from that period of history, just like we learn from the Renaissance, and we learn from the Age of Enlightenment, and we learn from the ceaseless battles, and we learn how to die nobly. We constantly prevail in our minds. Now, do we promote the life lived? Manly Hall pointed out to us that we enter this world of speculative Freemasons. We're taught that, aren't we? When the principles are applied and become part of our life, it's more than an intellectual exercise. It's when those principles begin to control our mouths, when they begin to control our thoughts, influence our thoughts, I guess we could say, that we become the Mason. Until then, we're in a sense, becoming something, not there yet. Work in progress. The foundation for something nobler, without knowing what that is. It's funny when we look around and this is the penis in it. Doesn't necessarily affect us. If it does, it's our own foolish pride, I guess. This is, I think, the appeal of the order. We can see it, don't we? If we were to talk about I've been openly in lodges a few times lately. Some of the talks that have been there. Had the good fortune to. I've talked about the temple of the mind. To tell you the truth, I think everybody in the room gets it. Temple of the mind with symbols around as mnemons. You put them together and you can have an understanding at a very superficial level. Or if we scratch the surface, tedium of hearing the same platitude over and over immediately dissolves. Euclid calculated the right angle, didn't he? At the time, this type of information, this type of predictability was considered perhaps the way we today consider magic. It had a special power to it. I don't mean the cynical everything is misdirection. This was considered magical. So those ideas, those calculations were considered so important that they were conveyed between select groups. Our select group today is different than it was 100 years ago. Rich men now congregate. The secular world had an effect of what it has. Rich men congregate where rich men congregate. The nouveau riche need to make a display of the wealth, don't they? Did you know that so-called old money doesn't display it because they've grown up with it? There's a comfort. They can go about being thrifty as well. Not because they don't have money to spend, but because it's not important. They can drive a modern car, take a relatively modest vacation, be happy doing the things they do without a conspicuous display. Don't be so caught up in the garishness of it all. Somebody that's deprived of something, when they're given that something, tends to go overboard. Whether it's a group of people who have never known freedom, when they get, of course, it's not tempered with experience. It's prone to use and abuse. I would say the African continent, we're seeing that happen. And in Asia, we're seeing that happen. Easy for us to hasty point of finger and say, ha ha. Where's our own patience? These ideas will take, a couple of hundred years to evolve for other people, just as they have for us. Their own backgrounds. We had those bloody battles, senselessness, but purposeful, I guess. Harwell Neuro said, life is like a game of cards. The hand that is dealt to you represents determinism. The way you play it is free will. We can't sort out who has the capacity by looking at the quality of shoes or the wristwatch he was, or the type of work that he does. But this was never a more difficult case or difficult cause than it is today. It simply is. What screws us up most in life is the picture in our head of how it is supposed to be. Who said? So we have a bit to do in this life. A bit more to do. And I think we should realize that there's a lot going on. You and I, maybe we're those bit players in this stage of life. But we need to be able to talk to the end of this as we get into the show. I want to talk a little bit about what's coming up. In the meantime, check this out and see if you don't agree.
Some things in life are made. They can really make you mad. Other things make you swear and curse. When chewing on a last gristle, grumble, whistle, and whistle, help things turn out for the best. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look.
Take it all too seriously. Take it all too seriously. Where does it get us? Start out alone, you end up alone. Sometimes it's I was listening to some of the work by Dr. Levitin at McGill University on the effects of music on the brain on music. And, he claims that science is not teaching us that music releases a hormone called oxytocin. It refers to trust hormone. When we are together and we're enjoying music collectively or we're singing, it brings this on. Oh my goodness! How many of our lodges have a note? How many lodges have a bit of music at all? We've forgotten. The scholarship has faded for lots of reasons, perhaps. Now, for us to sing together, we become apoplectic, self-conscious, and yet it's part of our history. Part of our history, and is there for a reason. The deeper expression of human emotion through music is obvious. In this show, as I move forward, we're going into our third year, and I want to start to scatter more music into the experience. Some of the hope will always be border on the bit of the sillies. I don't want to take myself that seriously. You know, it's the we move forward, and an industrious, clever group of men I would say has ever existed. But for the way that we learn to treat and talk, when we find things of disagreement, no need to bring more attention to the problem. I think as contemplative men, we can pull on the more subtle side of our personalities to be able to handle things that we don't necessarily have to play the world and act and pretend. Surely to goodness, we have something called poker face. You know, something's not quite proper or doesn't quite make sense to us. Do you notice how many times irritation seems to overwhelm the mind? It's simply that there's a mind that's a bit dormant or unaware or unprepared, not ready. So we also know that irritation is a temporary emotion, isn't it? Sometimes this guy has really poor ideas, or a poor idea or weak idea is said in earnest, or it's said by somebody of some degree of material or titular merit, has a great title. But weak ideas, if that's all it took, man, we would be in some serious trouble. But fortunately, we are watchers. We sit back and think about things before we react. At least that's the part that we're taught. We're taught to watch, to listen in silence, because that's where we become the student. I think it was the physicist Dirac who had a personal habit. He apparently was a very difficult man to speak with. Exceptionally brilliant, essential to our understanding of physics today. But it is said of him that he would spend an entire day thinking about the right sentence to say. Drew other people to distraction. The man that listened, maybe too, makes me feel I prattle on and fill up the space with words that don't really have much meaning. I find myself noticing that when people are talking but really don't have much to say. I should be better than that, I should be more thoughtful. Because there's probably somewhere in there a gem of an idea. Hey, been caught up in some philosophical discourse recently at your local coffee shop? Well, let me tell you, I'm going to help you here so that when it happens, you have a better sense of what's going on philosophically. So I want to talk to you a bit about philosophically false, some philosophical fallacies. The first, the one that we always like is post hoc ergo propter hoc. First, a word about the social usage of the term. In some circles, when uttered with this phrase can help you get lucky at a party. Interestingly, it has the exact opposite effect when uttered in English. In English, it says, after this, therefore, because of this. And go figure. The phrase describes the error of assuming that because one follows another, that thing was caused by the other. For obvious reasons, false logic is popular in socio-political discourse, such as most people hooked on heroin started with marijuana. True, but even more started with milk. Better that we just get nasty about it and say, come and agree with me, Darren. I only like science when it agrees with me. Rarely does. I'm kidding. Post hoc makes life more interesting in some cultures. The sun rises when the rooster crows, so the rooster's crowing must make the sun rise. Or take this one. Every morning, she steps out onto her front stoop and exclaims, "Let this house be safe from tigers." And then she goes back inside. And finally, we said to her, "What's that all about? There isn't a tiger within 1,000 miles of here." She said, "See? It works." An old Jewish gentleman marries a younger lady, and they are very, very much in love. However, no matter what the husband does sexually, the woman never reaches orgasm. Since a Jewish wife is entitled to sexual pleasure, they decide to ask the rabbi. The rabbi listens to their story, strokes his beard, and makes the following suggestion. "Hire a strapping young man. While the two of you are making love, have the young man wave a towel over you. That will help the wife fantasize and should bring on an orgasm." They go home and follow the rabbi's advice. They hire a handsome young man, and he waves a towel over them as they make love. It doesn't help, and he is still unsatisfied. Perplexed, they go back to the rabbi. "Okay," says the rabbi to the husband, "let's try the reverse. The young man make love to your wife, and you wave the towel over them." Once again, they follow the rabbi's advice. The young man gets into bed with the wife, and the husband waves the towel. The young man gets to work, and with great enthusiasm, the wife soon has an enormous, earth-shaking, screaming orgasm. The husband smiles, looks at the young man, and says to him triumphantly, "Schmuck, that's the way you wave a towel." Oh, propter huck. An octogenarian man in a nursing home comes up to an elderly lady wearing hot pink pants and says, "Today's my birthday." "Wonderful," she replies. I can tell you exactly how old you are." "Really? How?" The lady says, "Easy, drop your pants." The man drops his pants. "Okay," she says, "now drop your shorts." The man does her bidding. She fawns him for a moment and says, "You're 84. He says, "How did you know that?" She says, "You told me yesterday." The old man had fallen for the old trick in the book. Post hoc ergo propter hoc. Or after she chopped a field, therefore because chopped a field. In general, we're deceived post hoc ergo propter hoc because we fail to notice there's another cause at work. A young New York boy is being through the swamps of Louisiana by his cousin. "Is it true that an alligator won't attack you if you carry a flashlight?" says the city boy. Cousin replies, "Depends on how fast you carry the flashlight." The city boy saw the flashlight as a prop. It was only a prop. So think about that, how many times we may run into that kind of a complication where we observe the series of events and declare that one is caused by the other. In fact, it may just be the illusion. So, that's spellbinding. I want to talk to you a little bit now about a circular argument. A circular argument is an argument in which the evidence for a proposition contains the proposition itself. Often a circular argument can be a joke all by itself with no adornment yesterday necessary. It was autumn and the Indians on the reservation asked the new chief if it was going to be a cold winter. Raised in the ways of the modern world, the chief had never been taught the old secrets and had no way of knowing whether the winter would be cold or mild. To be on the safe side, he advised the tribe to collect wood and be prepared for a cold winter. A few days later, in practical afterthought, he called the National Weather Service and asked whether they were forecasting a cold winter. The meteorologist replied that indeed he thought the winter might be cold, quite cold, and that he advised the tribe to stock even more wood. A couple of weeks later, the chief checked in again with the weather service. "Does it still look like a cold winter?" asked the chief. "It sure does," replied the meteorologist. "It looks like a very cold winter." The chief advised the tribe to gather up every scrap of wood they could. A couple of weeks later, the chief called the weather service again and asked how the weather wind was looking at that point. And the meteorologist said, "We're now forecast that it will be one of the coldest winters on record." "Really?" said the chief. "How can you be so sure?" The meteorologist replied, "The Indians are collecting wood like crazy." The chief's evidence for the need to stock more wood turns out to be that he was stocking more wood. Fortunately, he was using a circular saw. Get it? Get it? Makes you think, doesn't it? You may have to sit back, park your car for a second, sit back, scratch your head, run that one back, and listen to it. It does make sense. Fall in there. Fall in every bit of it. Now, we get closer to, we'll come back to that a little bit later. Those are things that have been passed down. If we talk about that portal and the Masonic Order presents before us, you look through it to the laboratories and libraries and museums and the imaginations of time gone by. Now we're coming up to the solstice, aren't we? The winter solstice. The time was celebration of mankind. We've reached a zenith, shortest day of the year. This one's happening on the 22nd of December. I think it's 6, what are we looking at? 6:22 in the morning, the exact time. The sun reaches its beginning in the astronomical winter. The sun reaches its southernmost position of the northern hemisphere, and it's really the lowest time on the horizon. And we begin to see the sun start turning northward. The days get longer until day and night are in equal length when vernal equinox arrives. And 2013 is going to be on the 20th of March when the sun crosses the equator. That's the day of balance. Hmm? That's the day of balance. We need here to develop a measurement of time. The oldest clock in the world is in Salisbury, England. It was built in 1386. Those are tick clocks. We had other ways of measuring. The Earth is 4.5 billion years old. So says nature.nps. Dinosaurs lived here more. One of the most successful animals that lasted over 100 million years. We have impact theory, or the craters in Yucatan. Is that crater in Yucatan, though, is actually older than the, you know, they think that there's a big impact. How come the impact before the dinosaurs? Modern man, what, 276,000 years? So ask yourself, how old is time? The Christian and the Jew say 5.7 to 10,000 years ago. If God created the universe, we as persons existed before that. How if God created, could he exist before that? The daily clocks were the shadow clocks. You know, Egyptians had that, Chinese, Babylonian, Greeks, and Romans. But the 24-hour day, that's the Egyptians. Night was divided into 12 hours, and day was 10 hours. That was the hour before dawn and the hour after sunset. Then societies noticed that the sun rose and set at different places in summer and winter. So I had to modify it. Into what do we have now? Georgian calendar. I want to wrap up today's show. Thank you very much for Jimmy. The 20th of March, Joy Porter is going to be speaking at Brock University at the 5th annual Sankey Lecture. She's going to be speaking on Native American Freemasonry from Joseph Brandt to the 21st century. That whole event is spectacular. It's a product, you know, the cooperation and enthusiasm of the faculty and administration of Rocky University, a growing, up-and-coming university. So I don't know if we could say it has ivy growing on the walls, but it has something that the old schools don't have. It has a future ahead of it that is ripe development. News on the block? You betcha. But to prove that they belong? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, Bill Porter is a scholar from Swansea University in Wales. And if you've read her book, please do take a look at it. Masonry. It is fascinating to read. This is no slouch. This woman is an exceptional writer, an exceptional mind. So I'm hoping we're going to, this is a bit of speculation, Renee Rafferty, Professor Rafferty from University, I'm hoping we can twist her arm, cajole her, entice her to speak again. She is an incredible historian. Incredible. And we'd be fortunate if she will consider being an introduction again. The idea, and John Forrester and the good folks with the College of Freemasonry and the Committee on Masonic Education are expanding on his on their ideas that began in the Ohio Valley with a conference day last year, and I would say it was well received and full of interesting topics. Thank you. We may not be the professional scholars, but we're pretty good. We're pretty good. And it was a wonderful experience. Now, John has had the idea, he's recognized that there's a serious need in other places. I mean, people with an appetite for this type of material. So in the spring, he's launching a similar event in London, Ontario. And he tells me that then, sometime about that time, he's going to be doing organizing a Thunder Day, where brethren have been holding, building the cathedrals to Freemasonry for hundreds of years, hundreds. So we see that the gravitas, the importance and centrality of Freemasons' education is now being more than accepted. It's filling an appetite. Who knew the appetite was so great? Who knew? Not only newer members of the order, but our more senior members of the order, still always the students, always receptive to new information, always ready and able to listen. Those are the people that we owe a great deal, because you can see that the flame of curiosity has not diminished at all. When you sit through the 5,000th ritual, I wonder if it's the same as going through the first 500 or first 1,000. But still, these men who are sitting on the edge of their seats, ready to ask questions, ready to pose ideas, having done as much as they felt they could with what they had. But they held together the organization through bonhomme, goodwill, esprit de corps. If you want a good time, go to the lodges in Sault Ste. Marie. They tell me up there they have three lodges in town. One's the oldest, one's the biggest, and one's best. The hospitality is absolutely stunning. The way that those men embrace Masonry is just an absolute joy to experience. We had a great time. It's like the enthusiasm of those fellows at Thistle Lodge over in Amherst. Just stunning. It's great fun. Don't take themselves too seriously. Take the craft very seriously. It's wonderful. Or the boys in Guelph at Trim Lodge. They've hit their stride. They're having a good time. I think they're one of the newer lodges in that district. But just amazing, amazing what the feel, the character of the lodge when you step through the door. It's just a fun atmosphere. Or you get the same thing in Steiner, you get the same thing in Thessalon, you get the same thing in, I think, somewhere in Meaford, the boys at Pythagoras. It was just a fabulous experience. I don't mean to suggest that there aren't more. It's just those combined this morning, today. And if you get a chance, I'm sure sit in those lodges, you'll feel the way, you'll feel that incredible hospitality. So we're going to wrap up the show today. We've got the Sankey lecture coming up. We are going to bring the, for those travelers, so an international conference in the history of Freemasonry is going on in Edinburgh, Scotland in May of 2018. You know that we are going to be putting in motion the working to bring that to the Niagara area for 2015, I think May 2015. And I would extol and urge and encourage anybody to start saving your nickels and dimes and plan to travel to Niagara, be there, attend 3 days of the most intense Masonic experience. It's not necessarily set up for Masons. It's about Freemasonry and topics Masonic. But it's a room full of the world scholars on the topics. I'm hoping to see our friend Andreas Ornefors, the first speaker at the Sankey Lectures. And actually, he's a man that I very much admire. And every time that if you had in the audience, you know that he's an historian of ideas. And it's like a jaw-dropping experience listening to him. What he does is Dr. Ornefors, a Swedish historian, seems to credit the room, his audiences, with an ability to have studied and read. He is so enthusiastic about the topic. He gave us, an hour of material on symbolism that was so many dimensions all at one time. And you know what's really charming? I was spellbound by his delivery, and it's one of those where you want to stop. You need to be able to see this man on tape so that you can stop and listen and rewrite and replay what he said so that it can resonate. Go back to the library and do your readings and get the reference and the context and move on. He puts his ideas together like a chess match, and it's incredible. It's an incredible experience. But what I admire about Brother Ornefors from the Grand Lodge of Sweden is the fact that he came to us as a gesture to a very dear, dear friend. Malcolm Davies was the head of the department at Leiden University, or was it Sheffield? No, it was Sheffield. Malcolm had agreed to be the first lecturer at Sankey. Of course, a university, what do you say, relatively obscure in topic, a lecture that had never been offered before, and here Malcolm said, of course, to it. Tragically, tragic for all those who knew him. Malcolm died before the event was able to occur. And it was Andrea Sonoforos, his friend, his colleague, who stepped up, fulfilled his good friend's commitment. I know not many of you know that. Andreas is too humble to mention it. But I only share it with you because it's the type of thing that I find enormously inspiring. Enormously inspiring. Yet, anyway, you would do it. Across an ocean, deliver a paper. Well, because his friend had made a commitment. And now we know that Dr. Onoforos is a voting member of Ars Quattro Coronati. And he's very involved in the International Conference on the History of Freemasonry, screening people who are putting papers together. You don't just walk in the doors of that. You have to put your ideas, and they're properly screened by an academic committee. Fortuitous to say that we had a chance to meet him, that I had a chance to get to know him. Now I can call him a friend. His doesn't really do it justice. I'll leave you with, today has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for your help with some of the questions that have been pressing on my mind. I'm going to leave you with a song that was a chorus and replay, just as it's pure fun, written by a Mason, of course, as you knew. Have fun with it. See you soon.
I think might you swim and curse when you're chewing on a gristle.
Dear.
Grumble, give a whistle, and this'll help you turn out for the best. Hey. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten. That's to laugh, smile, and dance and sing. When you're feeling in doubt, obviously chumps, just purse your lips and whistle. That's the thing. Curtain with a band. Forget about your seat.
that it? Is it? I mean, that really is it?
Yes, thanks. That's all we need. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. When this song?
No, this song is a bit literal, I think. We have plenty of songs on the album anyway, as it happens. Is
who?
£30 all right?
Or university tuition. Find out. Thank you.
asking me.
Okay, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Well, let's switch our attention now to the National Football League. The NFL is once again invading Canada as part of the annual deal that sees the Buffalo Bills playing in Toronto. But this could be the last time NFL games are played in Toronto. Very well this year, with more on that one. You know, 5 years ago, people thought this would be a smash hit, the NFL coming to Toronto. But it appears it hasn't worked out to what organizers were hoping it would be.
Absolutely right. I remember 5 years ago, some of the experts were saying, hey, they charge any price for these tickets, and people will pay. People come to see the NFL in Toronto. And Rush Communications did charge some pretty important ticket prices, and people didn't want to pay to see the Bills for that kind of ticket price. I mean, in fact, people that did pay those prices found themselves sitting beside people who were given free tickets because they had to give a lot of the tickets away to those early games because people just weren't purchasing them. But this was a 5-8 game, $78 million deal. And as you said, this is the last game of that deal. There is apparently talks going on between Rogers Communications and the Buffalo Bills to maybe continue this deal. That hasn't finalized yet, so we don't know if this will be the last time we see this deal here in Toronto. If you don't know, but full confession, I was one of those people that got the free ticket.
So you decided to pay $250. I didn't tell him that. I also got free peanuts. But anyway, we're talking about this game day, and organizers are trying to pull out all the stops to get people involved.
They really want people to come through. They haven't sold out one of these games, not a regular season game in Toronto yet. They would like to do that day. They've slashed ticket prices by 35%. In fact, the average price now is just $99, which is much more comparable to the rest of the league. In addition to that, they're pulling the stuff with a big halftime show with the South Korean pop star Psy. And they've also got this. You might have noticed coming to work today that a lot of streets were closed down. It was very difficult to get into a parking lot.
Right off the street from the Rogers Center.
That's right.
We don't live in the city.
So a lot of the streets around this building were closed down. There's a big street festival that they're having. Because tailgating is such a big part of NFL football, and it's something we haven't seen a lot of with these games in Toronto. So they're trying to bring a little bit more of the NFL atmosphere.
Sure. Many people are still feeling.
Well, we had similar emotions and similar experience, and so I can understand his expression of that. We had similar feelings for the family.
It's probably not hitting as hard with some of them, and I think that there might be some great things that come from these little kids, because this is now is a part of who they are, and maybe there will be some great things they'll see from these kids, whether it be just a sensitivity to other people, a creativeness that maybe we either otherwise. I know that there's a lot of strengths that my peers have because of going through a hard situation, but yeah, I do think it's different because I don't.
He may be angry at other things, but I can understand why he says he's not angry at family, because that's just kind of a fruitless emotion at that point. And you understand that they're suffering a loss as well.
Well, Peter Reed, at this time when we're paying tribute to victims here in Connecticut, you also want to pay tribute to your daughter, the daughter-in-law, 19-year-old Mary Karen. Everything that I have read in her over the years, she was a very
generous reservoir through 12 cups of fresh hot coffee. Plus, a P6-ounce hot water system to dispense more beverages at the same time or on its own. So you can keep the hot beverages flowing and the day going. It's not just a coffee maker. It's definitely a plus. Art Coffee Plus.
It's a tradition, honey. Here is why. What fun it is to... Great tradition. It's still very grand somehow.
Right now, it's Big Savings Big Lots. This week's special wrap and multi-bag pack for $2 each. Plus, let me tell toys.
The majority of those dying today were children.
torn away from them too early, and there are no words to ease their pain. This evening, Michelle and I will do what every in America will do, which is our children will turn. And we'll tell them that we love them, and we'll remind each other how deeply we love one another. But there are families in Connecticut who cannot get tonight. May God bless the memory of the victims. And the words of Scripture heal the brokenhearted, bind up their wounds.
Thank you.
much more ahead on the school shooting tragedy here in Newtown, Connecticut. But first, let's go to CNN's Victor Blumwell at the CNN Center in Atlanta for the latest and the other stories making headlines today. Hey, Derek.
Hello, Kate. Thank you. In Washington, we could be a step closer to a deal that would prevent the U.S. from falling on a fiscal cliff. Sources tell CNN that Speaker John Boehner is prepared to raise taxes on the wealthy, specifically those making $1 million or more as part of a plan to reduce deficits. Tax hikes for the wealthy are something the president has said must be included in any plan. It's a change from Boehner's previous position. He's called any tax increases a non-starter. Staying in Washington, President Obama appears set to nominate Senator John Kerry as his next Secretary of State. The formal announcement could come this week. United Nations Ambassador Susan Rice was the expected choice, but you remember she pulled her name out of running because of controversy over her comments in the wake of the Benghazi attacks. And Secretary Hillary Clinton was supposed to testify about Benghazi this week, but that's now on hold. She suffered a concussion. Now she's resting at home. Clinton has been battling a stomach virus. She fainted after becoming dehydrated, but her office says this is not severe. All of our hearts are heavy this week.
Take it on.
Reminder we could all use that good things do still happen.
This Christmas, let's give a special gift card to our employees. great idea.
So they can start the day with
a great cup of coffee.
Here for lunch.
Tasty food, snacks, and drinks.
Like it. And on the way home?
Well, they're paying for the American made gas.
But what the car can do all day?
They work great for me, too.
Give everyone in your life the extra special gift card. Only at Quick Throw.
Twin Village Recycling, buyer of scrap iron, metal, junk cars, and trucks.
Beach, California yesterday afternoon. They said the suspect was taken to
after firing about 50 shots. No injuries were reported. And police in Alabama yesterday killed two suspects following separate shooting incidents near Birmingham. They left three people dead. Syrian government fighters and jets reported the old fire on a refugee camp in Damascus this morning. Activists say that one missile hit at a mosque, including dozens have been killed. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is recovering at home after fainting and hitting her head. The concussion she suffered is expected to prevent Mrs. Clinton from appearing this week before two congressional committees looking at the attack in Benghazi, Libya, that killed four Americans, including the U.S. ambassador. South Africa says that former President Nelson Mandela underwent surgery for gallstones yesterday. The operation on the 94-year-old Mandela was described as successful. Now, today's weather. Rain is likely east of the Mississippi and along the west coast.
Being sent to a massacre by text message or robocall. then being told your child is dead.
She is an incredible person. And I'm so glad to be her dad.
Robbie Parker's daughter, Emily, was one of the 20 dead children. Now they are no longer anybody's children, everybody's children. We know their names. 8 boys, 12 girls, all first graders. And we know that Dawn Hawksbrook, the principal, used to dress up in costumes to make her students smile. And the teacher, Victoria Soto, died sheltering her class. The details are starting to emerge of Adam Lanza and his mother, Nancy. Marta Lanza is Adam Lanza's aunt.
Yeah. I know she had issues with school. She eventually wound up homeschooling him. She battled the school district, but capacity, I'm not 100% certain if it was behavior, if it was learning disabilities, I really don't know, but he was a very, very bright boy.
Bob tells me that
smart, but troubled.
Here took one of the previous assault rifles.
And we watched before as the story plays out in slow motion.
Sure,
like some endless TV.
One of the registered weapons.
Comfort, we have been through this.
I can't see you pay attention.
This time, with the president playing his part.
Did you
want to? We're going to come together and take meaningful action to prevent more tragedies like this, regardless of the politics.
But what? When? Exactly the same thing every time it's happened. The shootings haven't stopped. And politics has always gotten in the way.
You can't.
In this town, different.
Nope.
It's already been ranked the second worst school shooting in American history. Virginia Tech in 2007 was the worst. 32 people died there. At Columbine High School in 1999, 13 people were killed, another 24 wounded. But since when have school shootings had their own grisly greatest hits?
What we see is patterns of one of these incidents inspiring, if you will, to serve people who are already thinking about doing something like that. To do copycat incidents or to enhance their own incident to make it worse.
This even has a name, the Werther effect, according to John Miller, former FBS spokesman and now a senior correspondent for CBS News.
Mm-hmm. How do we stop? Can we stop?
Well, there's a series of pin and egg questions there. Is the security of the physical premises, is the gun laws, is it us?
Adam Lanza's mother, we learned, was a gun enthusiast. She owned the guns her son used to kill her and the rest of the Newtown victims. Will this latest incident change any minds on gun control? Probably not. According to a Pew Research Center survey, before and after the Aurora, Colorado theater shootings in July, attitudes remained virtually unchanged.
A
Gallup poll last year showed that support for a ban on handguns has actually gone down dramatically over the last 50 years to a record low of 26%.
Wow, you're screwed.
Now listen to this FBI statistic.
It was this past Black Friday, the shopping day after Thanksgiving, when we hit the all-time record in history for gun sales. Over that three-day period, it sold 283,423 guns in the United States.
And on Thursday, the day before Newtown, the Michigan State Legislature passed a bill that will allow concealed weapons in, among other places, schools. The governor is deciding whether to sign it.
Are we headed toward an environment in this country where we have fortress kindergarten?
We don't need to train kindergartners with their pencils and backpacks with their intruders that have a SWAT team of metal detector at every door.
Kenneth Trump is president of National School Safety and Security Services in Cleveland.
Parents want to know two things. Number one, what steps did you have in place to prevent an incident, and how well prepared were you to respond when a crisis occurred? Many incidents can and have been prevented in school violence. Unfortunately, and that a lot better is a Columbine. Unfortunately, there's still going to be those that slip through the cracks.
When you front glass has been, okay, they're unsure why.
Adam Lanza turns not all. The trauma they've experienced could have lasting physical, not just emotional effects.
There's a couple studies right now looking at IQ where kids with trauma have lower IQ than those who don't.
Dr. Glenn Dykes is chairman of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at New York University Langone Medical Center and an expert on childhood trauma.
It's related in a strong way to problems with depression, suicide, problem with obesity, even some cancer rates, heart disease. And that's why there's so much attention going into helping people who've experienced trauma.
Already, the inevitable shrines have appeared. The vigils have begun. Newtown is wearing its brown cloth on its sleeve. But we've seen this before, too. If only grieving in public could fix things, could end the killings. But in the end, hugs are not enough.
You don't care.
Just a hint. None of the above.
And I think that's going to keep going. I think that's the trend.
Researchers call them the nuns, but
those who checked the non-box when asked to describe their religious affiliation, and they've dealt since 1990.
We're not necessarily becoming more secular, are we?
I mean, maybe a little.
Kerry Funk is the senior researcher on that Pew study and says it's a complicated question because being unaffiliated isn't necessarily the same as not having faith.
58% of the unaffiliated say they believe in God or universal spirit. More than a third describe themselves as spiritual people, but not religious people.
And a good portion of them still say they pray.
And a good portion pray at least daily.
So, it's not God or the thought of a higher power that's turning people off. Just what is? The study suggests it's organized religion.
Yes.
With respondents overwhelmingly saying many organizations are just too focused on money, power, and politics. Respondents are the greatest decline. They now account for just 48% of religious adults. It's the first time in history that the United States doesn't have a Protestant majority.
Every time I walk in here, I'm like, I cannot believe places as large.
Are you kidding with me?
So 4,000 people.
Evangelical churches aren't immune either. All right, is everybody ready? Mega churches, once bursting the scenes, are a little less mega than they used to be.
We're seeing church attendance being much more inconsistent than I've ever seen it in my entire life.
Well, today, Lisa, we embark on Ed Young is the senior pastor of the Fellowship Church. Now, the Bible talks a lot about the enjoyment of sex. He's hardly conventional. Even preaching a sermon with his wife, sitting on a double bed. Whatever he said, he's saying, amen. It's his attempt, not a gimmick, he says, but to reach those who these days find organized religion at its best irrelevant, at its worst, intolerant.
I don't think we have been vulnerable enough. I don't think we have been real enough about issues and about life. You get to realize that the church is pretty much one generation away from extinction.
He is the young, one out of every person serving, in fact, under the age of 30, who say they don't link themselves with any organized religion. Compare that with the greatest generation, where only one in 20 claims no religious home.
We're into the post-denominational phase, I think, in many ways, in the United States. So religion is very diverse, with clear differences between then Buddhists.
Charles Kimball is the director of religion at the University of Oklahoma. I heard that most of his students still respect religious organizations, the power to do good world. Author stands on social issues, especially abortion and gay rights, that he feels are driving the young away.
The vast majority of students, even people coming out of pretty traditional religious backgrounds, don't see these as a big deal. I don't get what the issue here. I don't understand it.
In my experience, a lot of my friends have become nuns.
We gathered a few of his students also they believe in God, but agreed that organized religion largely failed to adapt to a changing culture. Harley Halfling grew up a conservative Christian.
I don't understand how a loving God can send people to hell. I'm pretty sure I disobeyed my parents. They would not throw me in the fireplace.
I go to a church here in Norman.
Jay Fisher was raised Methodist, and he still goes to church, but only about once a month.
Because there's so much bureaucracy and rules and things that a church has to do that don't necessarily fit with the beliefs or the tenets that they preach.
William Fulton grew up Baptist, went to Catholic school, and for the moment attends a Methodist church.
Well, I would say I'm strongly affiliated with the church, I guess, I do, but I get something out of it. And it's sort of like when a person says that they're single and looking rather than single and not ever hoping to find anything else.
There are plenty of alternatives to those looking to worship in a more individual way. One of the most popular holiday services in New York City this time of year is the revival of the ancient solstice rituals. At the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. Paul Winner leads that celebration.
The journey through the longest night was really symbolic of the catharsis, of coming through the dark night of the soul. dark times, like so many of our friends in Connecticut are having now. Very hard to understand how we're going to reconcile that, how we'll come out the other side of it. But somewhere down deep, we hope that we'll have the optimism that we will overcome.
What is hope and optimism to some is faith and answered prayers to others. On this weekend in particular, as the conversation inevitably turns to unimaginable thoughts of peace and human kindness bind us all as one.
Next.
Sure.